Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's podcast is titled Children Sharing Experiences in Divorce. We have as our guest Tammy Friedkin, a licensed marriage and family therapist and a therapist beyond that. I met Tammy in a networking association that I belong to called Los Angeles Marriage and Family Therapists. She was so interesting to me that we had lunch one day, and in talking with her and learning about her background, I said, you absolutely have to come on and share your experience, the way you have worked with children and now continue to work with children in divorce, because this is the most important topic between assets and debts, any other considerations, it's the children. Tammy, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, and I'm just so glad that I can come and talk about such a wonderful topic that's so close to my heart and that people need to hear.
Yes, and people need to hear this about your background, too, before we get into the questions. So Tammy was a counselor in the Los Angeles School District for 17 years, and she did something that I have never heard of another counselor doing. She worked with all age groups of children, both individually and in groups in the school, but they were all children experiencing divorce. And when I heard that she worked with in groups, little support groups of children, you know, we're used to that with adults, but I'm not used to that with children. So that really piqued my interest. And Tammy, I'm just going to start with the questions now. What were your most compelling experiences with children going through their parents' divorce, but it's their divorce too, in terms of how they frame it? But what were your most compelling experiences when you were a counselor?
Well, you know, I saw several really serious issues coming up that kids would talk about that would cause them so much anxiety. And one was often when one parent would talk about the other parent in a negative way. Or even if one parent would ask the child to be in the middle by saying, can you ask your mom if you can come on Saturday? Scheduling issues. So what that does to the child, it causes so much anxiety because now they're triangled in the middle. And then what I would see happen is as a result of that, their grades would go down, they would have anxiety, they would get depressed. Because, and I would hear this from several kids, it would be the concern was, oh, my mom says bad things about my dad, or my dad says bad things about my mom. And it's confusing because children love both of their parents. So that was a big issue that I'd see happening in groups from many of the kids, that similar stress of that, hearing one parent talk about the other. What I would hear kids talk about a lot that was difficult is going, just the fact of going from one house to the other during the week, or and having their stuff at one house, but then having to bring it home and feeling insecure about that. And it's very difficult because especially kids at that age, they want to feel secure and safe. And when there's a lot of movement, it creates anxiety again. So talking about those feelings and hearing the other kids say the same thing, and I would bring it up and say, wow, a lot of you have just talked about how hard it is to go from one house to another. Who would like to share? And you'd have all the kids wanting to share. So that was a way that they were getting their feelings out to help them through this stage.
Tammy, did you see their behavior improve the more they shared?
Absolutely, because what was happening is a couple things. There was less acting out behavior. So parents would say they were less argumentative at home. They were not fighting with their siblings. Also in their class, their grades were getting better. They were able to concentrate. Because if these feelings aren't talked about, it blocks the mind that can actually be academic, that can think. What happens is when there's strong emotions, the part of the brain that is able to do work, it blocks it. So by talking about it, getting their feelings out, it opens up so that they can do okay in school. And also acting out, since their mind is not developed like adults, they have a difficult time being able to express that, like, I feel sad or I feel angry. So they act out their emotions. And so the acting out is by fighting, by taking things, by doing any kind of behavior that's not appropriate. So what I would hear is that those behaviors were better. I had one fourth grade little boy I was working with. Mom came in and said he was constantly screaming. He'd have outbursts. He wouldn't want to go to school when she would say it's time to get up. He was arguing, angry. When I worked with the child and he was expressing his feelings, she'd say he's not as angry anymore. So you start to see the behaviors change.
So you see children now individually, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, what's the difference between a child going to a therapist on their own and a child being in a support group of other children in terms of the benefit to them?
Yeah. Well, you know, each has a benefit in a different way. So when I work with kids individually, you know, I can get to the issue more quickly because my attention is just on them, and whatever their issue is, I may be reading a book which talks about what they're going through, or having them draw pictures and talking about it, or showing them a special little video. And so in some individual is very good because you can get to the issue. But it's also nice, the support of hearing other kids too also helps them because they see I'm not alone.
Yes. Yes. And is there a common thread that goes through most children's reactions to divorce? What do they say? What do they want? What do they do? Is there something what is that?
So most kids that I talk to, they always have the wish, the desire, I wish my mom and dad were together.
Aww.
So that is always what I hear. I wish they would be back together. So what's very important as a therapist before we even start is to validate that feeling, because that's causing, it's sad. So I validate that feeling. It is sad. I know this must be really hard. I can hear you're really sad about that. So validating the feeling first. That is one thing, no matter what. Now, another issue that all children have of divorce, there's a couple things, is they feel, and I hear this from all the kids I've worked with in schools, individually, it is my fault. So they automatically think it's my fault. And so right away, I start with educating, talking to the children about that mommy and daddy, sometimes, you know, they meet each other and they love each other, but then sometimes they fall out of love and they're changing. And it just, they like each other in a different way. And because that's important right away, they have to know. And part of why they think it's their fault, again, that's the developmental stage of the child's brain. They think everything is me, because they think life is about them. So thinking it's their fault. And another really important thing that I emphasize with the kids, because when they have fear. And the fear is because when parents break up, they feel no longer safe. And so it's always something that I repeat all the time in my counseling and in groups. Just because your mom and dad are living separately, they each love you. Your mom loves you. Your dad loves you. And they're always going to be your mom and dad. Because there's a rational fear. Children think, oh, if they're divorced, maybe I'm not going to have there's some abandonment issues. Come up.
Yes. Well, you know, there are some situations, aren't there, where the kids are calmer. I'm only saying this because of my sister. I talk about my sister's divorce all the time. Uh-huh. The kids were so happy when there were two households because they couldn't take the fighting anymore. And I have heard this from other adult people who remember as children their parents' divorce and say, well, yes, I mean, the security leaves because your security is in familiarity. You go home to one house, you have these same people that come back to the house every day called parents and other siblings and animals. So you have your structure, and when that structure is broken, then your security is broken, just like adults. You know, when something major happens in our lives, of course, our security is threatened too. But we have options as adults. Kids, they haven't learned what options are, and they're not there yet in that. And so have you found that at least, and I'm not trying to force you to say this, but are there some kids that actually can become calmer because it's calmer in the households when there's two households? Or is that really never the dominant issue? It's still insecure when there's a shift in the family unit.
Yeah. I think that the insecurity is the first thing, but then there's been children and families where they have been so traumatized by the fighting of their parents fighting and seeing the fighting and even seeing sometimes physical abuse that we do talk about now that your mom and dad are not living together and they're not fighting. Do you feel better? And they will say yes. So absolutely, like the positive part, I will talk about, and they will say that. Was that the...
Yeah. I spoke to my nephew, who was the youngest at the time of my sister's divorce. He was 3. The children were 3, 5, and 7. Mm-hmm. Only because he lived here for a while, I got to know him more as an adult, but mm-hmm. I knew them as they were growing up very well, and I knew what was going on in the marriage, and he said no. He said he was so happy when there were two households because there was no fighting anymore. Mm-hmm. They got to choose where they wanted to go. The parents lived 5 minutes apart, mm-hmm. and the kids did not have to be together to be at each house. They let the kids have free reign over decision-making. Mm-hmm. And lest we think that's crazy at 3, 5, and 7, it actually really worked. She did put them in therapy immediately. Mm. She went into therapy. The kids went into therapy. So that was really good. Yeah. And then, you know, we develop relationships with our parents differently at different ages, right? And so we go in and out of the amount of time we spend with each parent, depending on our age and developmental issues at the time. Mm-hmm. So they did that. You know, I could see that they were doing that as they needed to. But I can certainly understand that there is either fighting or there's not fighting leading up to the divorce. And I can understand in any case, as I'm sure people listening can understand, the insecurity when there are two households as opposed to one and everything that goes along with having two households. Did you ever recommend something like, if the parents can afford it, having duplicate sets of things in each house?
Yes, and it's interesting because I was reading a little bit about that a couple days ago, and that's actually one of the things that helps kids feel secure to have like, for instance, a toothbrush or whatever they need, so they don't have to bring it back and forth. That makes them feel, whatever their special toys, that they have a home here, and like secure.
Right. Yes. You're right. You said the word home. So they now have actually two homes. They're no longer a visitor in either home. And unless you have your most important stuff where you're going to be sleeping that night, mm-hmm. I can understand how it might not feel like your home. Maybe it's Dad's home, maybe it's Mom's home.
Yeah. Yeah, and which is, and sometimes, you know, what I'll say is to a child, if they have more than one, let's say two favorite, animals, or have one at each place.
Yes.
Right. So let's say something that's special to them, I will encourage them to have, you know, two of them so that they can have one here and here so they feel like
Tammy, are you talking about stuffed animals or actually breathing animals?
Yeah. Oh.
Did you mean stuffed animals for young kids?
I'm talking about, yeah.
Okay.
The little, but actually.
Pets are a big deal.
Actually, animals too. I mean, that, and as you're talking about it now, that could be a wonderful thing too, to make them feel. One of the little boys I'm working with now, whose parents are divorced, he just got a very special, a snake that he loves. And actually, he talks about it, but having something at the other home too, that could very much comfort and reduce that anxiety of the, yes,
and give them something to look forward to beyond being with their parents, of course.
Yes.
Okay, so now I wanted to ask you this. So, what are some warning signs for parents that their child may need therapy? And I just put a few examples down that are normal, but flesh this out. Anxiety, and you can talk about what anxiety looks like, fighting in the schoolyard, which you already mentioned, and then you mentioned attachment issues, so, and grades, of course. So what are some really classic warning signs?
Yeah. So when you start to see things like not being able to sleep, so kids waking up, if you see a lot more crying, arguing, kind of being moody, Of course, in school, yes, when there's, if you're hearing reports from the teacher that the child is fighting or even sometimes isolating, they seem like they're sitting in a corner, they're not playing in the yard. Sometimes I've had kids, depression can manifest as being sleepy. So sometimes sleepy in class, seeming very tired.
That's really important that you said that. Depression can manifest itself as sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Not wanting to do the things that they would usually do. So when you see a change in behavior that's concerning, that's usually a good time. That's a red flag. It's good to check something's going on, especially because kids will not, even adults need help expressing feelings, but kids especially don't share unless that has been taught in the family, you know, at a young age where parents have started with using I feel messages. And there are some families like that. But what I've noticed from most of the kids that I work with, there's fewer, unfortunately, that see the value or understand the value of feelings and talking about it.
What about doing damage to your body, pulling your hair out, this is horrible to say, putting pins or a sharp object in your skin? I mean, I've heard of some terrible things kids do to themselves.
Yes, there's a lot of ways, and I know when I was working in middle schools, I'd see a lot of kids that were cutting. That seems to be...
Yeah, cutting, that was the word.
Yeah, that are cutting, and I think I mentioned that I've been seeing a lot of kids now that are pulling their hair out and they're having bald spots.
Where did that come from? How did that start, do you think? Is it in the media, in any TV or anything?
I think it's, when they're doing that, so it's what's happening is there's so much anxiety and feelings not expressed. So the pulling the hair is to try to, it's trying to cope with the feelings because they're not expressing it. And I don't think they're seeing that unless there's videos right now, but I think it's just a way there's different ways that kids express anxiety.
But isn't that odd? Is that a new trend? Because trends start from somewhere.
Yeah, you know, that it's very interesting. So, because I've been out of the schools for the last, yes, the hair pulling seems to be something new.
I am telling you, you know, we pick things up from media when we just least expect it. And then all of a sudden there's a trend. It could be just a very quick movie scene. Or it could be, what is Slender Man? I mean, I heard about this Slender Man on the internet. Doesn't seem to be teaching good behavior. Seems to be teaching body mutilation. This is horrible. I read about this a few months ago. It was on the, of course, it was on the internet, and I read it.
It's called Slender Man.
Yeah, it's a person that talks to children on the internet.
Well, maybe there is something going on because kids are very, they watch either the people around them or what's going on. And that can be a learned behavior. So if there's somebody in the family, they can be watching that. But of course, with all the internet and the watching these things, that's why I always talk to parents how crucial it is to monitor how much kids are on the internet, because there's a lot of unhealthy
stuff. I know. Even for me as an adult, I see unhealthy things.
Yes.
Okay, so with that though, Tammy, what can parents do differently to address the warning signs differently than whatever they're doing in the house?
Mm-hmm.
Therapy immediately?
Excuse me. So.
That's okay. Drink some water.
Therapy, if you're noticing a change, I would immediately contact a therapist.
Okay.
Because the therapist immediately can assess the child and see what's going on. But meanwhile, I always tell parents what is so important is printing a feeling chart. There's a lot of feeling charts for kids. If you just Google feeling chart, and having that with you and doing a check-in every day. And what you do with your child is in elementary school, I'm talking, but actually you can do it up to
middle school.
Yeah. Is checking in with your child every day. How are you feeling? How is your day today? And I want you to point to a couple feelings and then maybe say why. So you're starting to help the child identify the feelings, which is going to help with whatever they're going through.
Absolutely.
So when I immediately in my sessions with children, when I'm working with them individually, before we do anything, I have a big chart and I say, this is a time now to do a check-in. We do a check-in. How have you been feeling this week? Sometimes I tell kids you can have more than one feeling, and they'll say sad, angry, upset. And then they have to say why for each. And I will find something out like, wow, this happened. This was very traumatic. And it's a way to know what's going on and giving them a place to express it.
What about the teenagers? How do the teenagers deal with this? Because it affects all ages. Do you see teenagers, or do you mostly see up to middle school?
I do see teens. And teens, it's very different because the age, and I do, and I work with teens individually. Because teens are in the stage where they are separating from their, in order to develop an identity, they have to go through this kind of rebellious, where they don't want to share anything with their parents. And it's not a rejection. What it is, it's how they're figuring out who they are with separate from their family, how they get their identity. But at the same time, they still need nurturing. With teens, what I have found working with them is you have to get on the boat with them, meaning you have to more get into their world and listen to what they're talking about. With all, if you start to question them, why are you doing this or who's that friend, they're going to close up. So when I have a teen talking about, oh, my friends, and they're going through and they were texting me, and I'm working with a 10th grader now, so 16, the reason she opens up is because I kind of get on the boat with her, meaning, oh, okay, so he was saying what, and oh, so what do you think about that? You have to meet them at their level. And then if I hear something that I'm concerned about, well, that person sounds like he could maybe it's not safe for you. Maybe it's not good for you to hang around this person because he doesn't sound like he's respecting your feelings. So it's different working with teens. If you're right away setting too many rules, they're going to react to that.
Okay, that's good to know. Yes, that's good to know with parents, because when there's no divorce and there's the household with teens, every parent says, okay, buckle in, stay, because this is going to be a very rocky ride. And I have cats, not kids. I say this all the time, but I have a lot of nieces and nephews. Plus, I was a kid. And I don't understand, and you can explain this to me if you don't mind, and the listeners. I don't understand why parents don't take a different approach with the teens. I know how I wanted to be handled as a teen. Certainly I wanted to know my parents were there to catch me if anything happened, but I also wanted to express myself in the way I wanted to express myself.
Yes.
Why do parents argue with their kids? Why, when a teenager, okay, this is the thing that made me absolutely crazy as a kid. Why, when a teenager is willing to share their thinking with a parent, will a parent crush them?
Okay, so that's a really excellent question. Murray Bowen, who was a famous family systems therapist, he talks about something called multi-generational transmission. And what that means is, however the parent was parented, so if they had a father or mother who they weren't allowed to express feeling, automatically they're going to be that kind of parent until... Now, there's a way to break this multi-generational transmission, and that is when the parent, and that's why I encourage, it's so important for parents to have their own therapy to look at their family of origin, because as they become aware of that, oh, like my father, I wasn't ever allowed to express a feeling. He would be so hard on me. I'm doing the same thing with my child. As they start to be aware of that, then they will be able to change some of those patterns. And a lot of these patterns are subconscious, they're unconscious. So by being aware of that in your own therapy, John Bradshaw, who is an amazing therapist, and he has a lot of wonderful books I always recommend. One is called The Family. He has always said that the way to become the best parent, and parenting is one of the hardest jobs ever.
Hardest of all. Cats are easier than kids. I know this.
Yes. And he says, if you work on yourself and understand, the more you understand yourself and your upbringing and your feelings, just by doing that kind of work, you're going to be able to be a healthy parent for your child, because they will feel that.
And shouldn't parents be highly complimented when their teenagers and any age child wants to share their thinking and feeling with them? And if you allow that to happen, you're opening the door to a much closer relationship, a much more open relationship. Yes. And therefore, you can protect your kids better, I would assume, right?
Absolutely, yes. Because what's happening is you're building, by validating and listening to their feelings, you are creating a trust bond which will allow your child to come to you and tell you when they're going through struggles or if they're doing something that's dangerous. If you don't allow them to have feelings, they're going to close up. They're going to do that stuff. They're going to rebel and do that stuff. So, yes, I think one of the biggest issues is creating a safe place where you can hear. Now, it's very difficult to do that if you did not grow up in a family where that was done. That's why family therapy, when I work with parents and teens and middle schoolers, I have them do I feel messages. I have them look at each other and I teach them those techniques. And then that gives them a basis to have a good relationship. So I very much recommend family therapy. I work with parents and kids and your own therapy sometimes. And that can create a good trust and bond so that when problems come up, you feel safe to talk about it.
Yes, because wouldn't it be wonderful if every parent could say and every child could say, well, we're each other's best friends. I mean, that would, if possible, that would be really, really
yes.
great.
And I do have to say, because I've done a lot of parenting classes too, and sometimes parents will get confused. It's wonderful if your child feels that, but then also to remember, I am a parent, because some parents think, oh, if they're my best friend, I can't say no. If I say no, they won't like me. But you want your child to respect you.
And there's a way of saying no, right? There's just a certain way. You don't put your child down.
Yes.
You maybe just have a discussion about an alternate way of thinking.
Right.
Something like that.
I remember one of the first things in graduate school was very interesting. We learned the difference between authoritarian parenting and authoritative. So authoritative with a V, that's when you're able to respect each other's feelings, listen. So if your child is saying, I'll give you an example. I want to go out. I want to go to this this event with my friend, and we may come home at 2 a.m. So the parent says, this is authoritative, healthy parenting. I hear what you're saying. I hear you really want to go. I am not comfortable with you coming home at 2. Maybe we can do 11. But I hear what you're saying, but I'm not comfortable. So my answer is no to 2, but maybe 11. Now that's authoritative. So you're respecting, you're saying, I hear your feeling. Now authoritarian would be, how dare you even ask me that? The answer is no, and there is no discussion. We're not even talking about it. That's authoritarian, which is controlling. And that is not helpful, because that's when the child will have anxiety and rebel.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so easy to do. The parent goes in fear mode, right, a lot of times. And and feels their job is to control somehow, some way. I want to go to something super important, and that is bringing new partners into the relationship. Now, I'm a mediator and what's called a legal document preparation company. So I file for amicable divorces and I write the settlement agreements. Sometimes we mediate them, sometimes they don't need to be mediated. But what I hear from the parents is discussion about what are the rules for bringing new partners into the relationship. And a lot of parents want a committed monogamous relationship for at least 6 months, some want a year, so that there's stability. When you bring somebody, a new person into the relationship, there's stability. But I want to address this from the child's point of view. What do children want when their parents have other relationships? A, the length of time from when the divorce is presented to them to the time when a new partner is presented to them, to them accepting anybody new into the relationship.
Yes, that is, that's a very, it's a very crucial and really important question. There are some different theories about this, but what I have found is because, you know, separation and divorce is traumatic for kids, it's, I have found parents rush too quick, and the going too quick is damaging. It's not helpful. Before introducing, it's important for the parent, and there's, it's hard to know, I mean, there's no guarantee, but that you really think you're going to be with this person. If you're just dating, no, I would not, every time you're dating somebody, I would not introduce. That's very, that's traumatizing. I'm working with some adults who, as kids, they would say, oh, my mom was dating so many different people, and as a result, they have picked wrong people and are, and it's affecting their marriage. So I would wait to introduce until you think this, if this person is kind of long-term.
But what do the kids want? From the kids' point of view, let's have this discussion. What have they said?
Oh,
when sharing, when sharing. What have they said about their ability?
Well, it's important. One of, I think, well, the one, I'm working with a fourth grader, a boy now, whose mom has remarried. And they also had two kids now of their own. And the father favors his own children.
So it's a blended family.
Blended family.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, yes. And that's very, kids will feel that. That's one thing that's, kids will feel that immediately. They're going to feel that, and it's really going to harm the whole family system. And there's a lot of problems as a result. So for a blended family, it is very important that for that parent to act in a fair way and treat all the kids the same, because the kids will pick that up. And even the little boy I'm working with, it causes depression.
Well, I'm kind of looking for still, Tammy, what do the kids say? Not what the adults do, not pointers on the adults anymore. What do the kids say about their experiences when new partners are presented to them?
Yeah, I've had some, and I want to think and give a good example.
Well, let me help you, because I get this in the office.
Yes.
And that is, you know, my child said that they're okay that daddy or mommy has somebody new, but they just want to be with daddy or mommy when it's their time to be with daddy or mommy. They don't want the new partner around. And I wanted to kind of explore that, since I hear it, I figured you had to have heard it too.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay, so right. Because there is, like we talked about, some of that, the trauma that happens when there's a separation, I think it's, and I have heard kids say that too, and I think it's important for making time to do some alone time. So if the dad is with a new woman, making sure, because that will help the child feel secure. Let's even if it's once a week, let's have our own time, just you and I playing. Let's go out and play ball, or let's go have an ice cream. Yes, because that's going to, because there's already that a little bit, the fear of abandonment. And so the kids will have a fear that maybe that person, I'm not that important.
Or is it uncomfortable for a child? Has a child expressed how they feel when all of a sudden they're meeting this new person? And maybe it has been 6 months or a year. Let's just say it has. The parents actually took that much time to introduce. Do kids say that they feel awkward? Do they feel jealous? What are they expressing?
They will usually say if there's an issue going on. Like the one fourth grader I'm working with, he came when I always check, how do you like your the new person? Well, he always treats his kids better. He's not fair with me.
Ah.
He's not fair. When I get in a fight with one of them, even if it's their fault, he'll side with them.
So okay, I can
with
I
their
can,
own child.
I can understand that. I can also understand the awkwardness of an adult now putting the blended family together and being a little bit reluctant to be a parent to the other child, the same as they're a parent, whatever that means, to their own children.
Mm.
Is that
yes, yes.
something an adult goes through, therefore the child picks up on it?
Yes. So I always recommend now, yeah, blended families absolutely benefit from therapy because the dynamics, it can be very, there's a lot going on there and a lot of feelings, just like you said. And so being able to come and talk about those things, it's going to make the bond and make the transition flow.
I just can't imagine being a child of divorce and then being introduced to new people, unless this person is so cool and what they experienced in their other parent was not so cool. I can see that as being joy because I've talked to other adult children, adult people that said, no, oh my gosh, I was so happy when mom married this guy or dad married this woman because they were such wonderful people. I do hear that too from the adults reflecting back.
Yeah, and it just reminds me also of an adult client that I have that she said what was sad for her is when the new husband moved in, she was sad because her birth father had built the house. And now he was no longer in there. So I think there's going to be, to answer your question, everyone's going to have individual based on their experience. So she said, when I was in middle school, that made me sad. She said it was awkward that this man was now living in here, in our house.
I can imagine.
She also picked that up because the dad would say that. This is why parents have to be very careful. Dad would say, oh, you know, I'm not in there. And she would pick that up from him. I'm sad because I built that house. And so parents, when there's a separation or divorce, everyone goes through a trauma. And sometimes, you know, parents forget. They're having these feelings and they'll share it with their kid who's there. But it's really important to get your own therapist because whether they're a teen or even in college, it's too much for a child to hear that. And they're trying to struggle with their own issues. So I couldn't recommend it more that everyone needs to have their own therapist.
And this is a perfect time to segue into how do people get in touch with you? The time went by very quickly.
Oh, wonderful.
So I'm concluding, Tammy, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, I'd love to help anybody. The best way is to call my office phone, which is area code 310-844-3900.
Say it one more time.
310-844-3900. That is a confidential voicemail. So if you will leave your name, and I get back to clients very quickly.
Okay.
And everything is confidential. I'm the only one that hears it. And also, my email is, I'll spell my last name, F like Frank, R-I, E-D like dog, K-I-N like Nancy, capital T like Tom, @AOL.com.
So Friedkin T, Friedkint at AOL.com.
Yeah.
And lastly, you take insurance, right?
I do. So okay. Do you want me to tell you which insurance?
Sure, go ahead.
So currently I'm a provider for MHN, Health Net Insurance, Blue Shield, Blue Cross, Cigna, and Beacon, which covers LA Care.
Okay. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. I want to thank you for this. This was great. You brought a new perspective in here, especially with working with the groups, children in groups. Amazing. And I want to thank all of you for listening. This is Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host. I am also located in Los Angeles. If you would like to get in touch with me, provide any topics you would like to hear about for this podcast, I can be reached by my email, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, or my business, Divorce Resource Incorporated. Divorce Resource Incorporated. I'm on the internet. All of my contact info is there. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.